Our speaker. I actually just met him about 15 minutes ago, but he seems to have a really great attitude, and I'm sure he's going to have a great message of recovery. So this is John F. from the Bay Area.
Thanks. I'm an addict named John.
Hey, John.
First, I want to thank the convention for, giving me an opportunity, to be of service. To be a messenger. Because I remember not too long ago, with the Days of Hope, 3,517 days ago, there was no message of hope. There was no level of honesty or open-mindedness or willingness, So, first and foremost, welcome to Narcotics Anonymous. I don't know what your story is. I don't know why you're here. I was just talking to somebody before the meeting. I remember being in a convention and feeling like I was all alone. I remember the disease was so cunning that it had me believing that this, although this had worked for thousands of other people who stood before me, this couldn't possibly work for me, I remember watching other speakers at the table sharing their experience, strength, and hope and identifying out so that the disease could isolate me, But thank God. Thank God for the keep coming back process. Thank God that you told me that you would love me till I learned how to love myself. And when I remember the first time I heard that, and I was like, what does that even mean? How could you possibly love me till I learned to love myself? How could you love somebody that didn't know how to love themselves? How could you give me love when the person who birthed me into this world couldn't show me that love? I remember as a child being in a room crying, hoping that my mother would come to me in the middle of the night, but she was too busy with these friends in the other room, and I remember thinking to myself that I wasn't enough. So even now, in the here and now, and I'm talking about my relationships, how now it can show up today when you tell me you love me, what I hear you say is that you're going to hurt me. When you ask me to be vulnerable, what I hear you say is that get honest so I can hold you hostage to it later, But thank God I stayed long enough to hear people share up here and get honest and allowed me the courage that just maybe I could share on that same level of honesty to find the freedom to have some peace of mind, I always introduce myself as an addict named John. I don't have no big tags or none of that other shit. You know what I'm saying? They told me if I don't remember what I am, it doesn't matter who I am. If I don't keep up front that I suffer from the disease of addiction, the obsession and the compulsion and the self-centeredness that it's all about me, 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 can't even consider the needs of you, so just leave me alone because I got this, left to my own demise. Because I don't know about anybody else in this room. When I'm feeling like a big bag of what the fuck, you know what I'm saying? I'm sitting with the last person I used with, the last person I stole with, the last person I stepped out of one of my relationships with. And why would I want to hang out with somebody like that when I'm in a bad spot? So I'm a literature guy, so I'm going to read this because the topic's a clear NA message. So what would happen if our groups had any other primary purpose? We feel our message would be diluted and lost. If we concentrated on making money, might get rich. If we were a social club, we would find many friends and lovers. If we specialize in education, we'd end up with many smart addicts. If our specialty was medical help, many would get healthy. If our group purpose were anything other than to carry the message, many would die and few would find recovery. So what is our message? The message is that any addict, can stop using drugs, lose the desire to use, and find a new way to live. Our message is hope and the promise of freedom. When all is said and done, our primary purpose can only be to carry the message to the addict who still suffers, because that is all we have to give. Look, too many times, and I'll keep it on me, too many times I remember in my recovery copping short here in Narcotics Anonymous. Too many times was I hearing people say that the only thing we promise is freedom from active addiction. Look, if that was the only promise, I don't know that I would have stayed. Freedom from active addiction wouldn't have been enough for this addict. If I was free from active addiction but still living in my car, behind the highs on B&A Boulevard before they built the condos and all that stuff, I don't know that I would still be here. If I was still angry with almost 10 years clean and telling myself that I hate me every day, I don't know that I would still be here. That's just for this addict. Because the message that any addict can lose the desire to use and find a new way of life. Too many times we come here, and I see it every day, that we lose the desire to use and then we forget about the new way of life that comes along with it. You know what I'm saying? Because see, I was that good addict that when I came here, look, I got clean at 21. The disease told me that it was okay to pack up shop and leave. Because when you said just for the day you'll never use again, I was like, what do you mean? What do you mean I'll never use again? Are you telling me when I get married, I won't be able to have a glass of champagne? Are you telling me that, like, you know, one day I won't be able to, like, you know, smoke a joint or, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, just the outrageous nonsense that I would tell myself. And the reality was that one was too many and a thousand was never enough. Because the obsession and the compulsion, right? I have this obsessive thinking that takes me out time and time again because I only feel the way I feel because I think the way I think. It's not what you say and do to me that makes me feel the way I feel. It's what I think about what you say and do to me that makes me feel the way I feel. Like I could come up in this meeting, right? And I'm not an insecure person most days when I get out of bed. But what'll happen is I'll come to a meeting and that one person doesn't hug me. And I start thinking to myself, well, how come they didn't hug me? You know what I'm saying? Is it because I don't have the freshest shoes out? Is it because I'm not cut up like a bag of dope? Is it I ain't gangster enough because I ain't got a tattoo on the side of my neck and shit? And you know what I'm saying? I start thinking all this nonsense, so I start to feel insecure about who I am. You know what I'm saying? I'm talking about having to learn how to change my thing, because in the first step it says that I have to completely change my old ways of thinking or go back to using. You know? That's just like, you know, I remember like somebody told me that I can't always think my way into good living. Sometimes I have to live my way into good thinking. Because see, I'm not an angry guy most days when I get out of bed. Well, what'll happen is that someone might talk slick to me, right? And I start thinking to myself, how dare they speak to me like that? Don't they know who I am? I'm a legend in my own mind. You know what I'm saying? Don't you know why I use cop tongue with? I start thinking all this stuff. And look, for everybody's in office, for you who can't see me, look, I weigh $165, right? So when I was down the project smoking crack, look, I was real skinny. So I wasn't whooping, you know what I'm saying? I wasn't whooping nobody's ass, but the disease will have me believing that shit. You know what I'm saying? And so, like, what'll happen is then when I make a choice, because in the first step it talks about we were powerless. It doesn't say that we are powerless. It's just once I stop justifying my actions, then I have a choice. And so what happened was is because of my self-centeredness, and God forbid, what would you think of me if I don't respond in a gangster manner? You know what I'm saying? What are you going to think about me? Are you going to think that it's okay to treat me as a welcome mat? Are you going to take my vulnerability as a sign of weakness? So then when I act out, what happens? The unmanageability is always clearly seen. It says it right in the first step. Once I make the choice, unmanageability is always the most prevalent thing that I've seen. Then I go home with the guilt, the shame, the remorse, the embarrassment. Because you know what happened? I did it again. Mm-hmm. See, John, people like you don't make it. People in your neighborhood, they don't go any further than what they do right there. Fuck it. Just go get one. And then what happens is that I had to learn by coming here and reporting to the home group. I remember when my parents allowed me to move back to their house, right? And I remember when my younger brother, who was in his active addiction, and we're fist fighting at 6 o'clock in the morning. And I'm telling you, I'm a grateful, blessed for coming back. You ain't gonna cuss mom out in the morning, and we're fist fighting. And then I would come to the group, and I'd be like, man, I told him, I showed him, and they were like, John, for every action, there doesn't need to be a reaction. Just because he's in the wrong doesn't mean you have to be in the wrong. Because you could be the only basic text that he ever reads. And so what I had to learn was is that when I didn't put my hands, when I didn't act out of character, when I was the example when nobody else was looking, what happened was is though although I walked away, right? And the disease told me I was a lame, I was soft, I wasn't nothing. But you know what I went home? And I laid my head down. You know what happened? Nothing. Because that guilt, shame, and embarrassment wasn't there waiting for me. So that I could obsess about it. So that I could beat myself up about all the other times when I couldn't show up, when I couldn't be of service, when I couldn't show up for myself or others and all that other stuff. And I start thinking about all the guilt and shameful events that make me feel so uncomfortable that I'm ready to come outside of my skin. So I'm willing to do whatever it takes. Look, sometimes I will do things knowing what the unmanageability already is and do that shit anyways because I don't want to feel the way I'm feeling. I'm talking about in the second step when it talks about coming to believe that a power greater than me can restore me to sanity. But part of that power greater than me was you. But first I had to like come to a realization that I was powerless. That I didn't have the ability to save myself. That in the first step, not only did I have to surrender that I had failed as a drug user, but I had to surrender to the new way of life. Because once I lose the obsession to use, and after 90 days clean, that was as clean as I was going to get. Now the work was really going to begin. Because see, I'm only as sane as I choose to be. That's why in the literature, when people like say, you know, when we get to that, why are we here? It says, before come to the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous, we were sick people. And people are like, oh, sick. That shit ain't cute. It's not. That's for this addict. That's for this addict. I ain't taking up no from anybody in this room. But it says, before coming here, we were sick people. So once I come here, I'm only as sick as I choose to be. Because, you know, part of the second step for me was, you know, if I'm still practicing old behaviors, it's not old. I remember being here at 21, and I remember sitting in the recovery house, and I was like, man, I don't know if this is going to work for me. Because I would hear the clubs calling down in Baltimore. It would start on a Thursday, and I'd be sweating by Friday, you know? And then I'd be sitting up in the house, like, pacing the floors, like, oh, my God, what am I going to do? Who should I call? Nobody wants me to call because they don't want to hear my bullshit. You know what I'm saying? All up in my head, the obsession. Just to find out that the therapeutic value of one act helping another is without parallel. Because when I showed up and told you about the insanity, you didn't judge me. And you understood. And you sat with me. Because, like, you know, because I didn't know if the workshop was on the clear any message or the symbol. So I was like, you know, I better be prepared for both. And the beginning of the symbol, it says simplicity is the key. What I learned here in Narcotics Anonymous, like, look, here, I want to ruin it for everybody. You know what we do here in Narcotics Anonymous? It's simple. It's real simple. You'll see it everywhere you go, all across the country. Look, I lived in Fort Lauderdale, Florida for a few years clean. And, like, look, we do it the same way everywhere. We drink coffee and we figure shit out. You know what I'm saying? I'm just saying. That's what we do. So, like, look, when you show up to the meeting before the meeting, people are going to be smoking cigarettes, drinking coffee. Some are drinking Red Bulls nowadays, you know what I'm saying, trying to figure some shit out. Then we'll go into the meeting for an hour. We'll hear someone share the meeting and drink the coffee, still trying to figure stuff out. After the meeting, you'll see a group of people again standing outside, drinking coffee, Red Bulls, whatever, trying to figure some shit. Look, and if we still can't, look, because look, it says, we don't care who you are, what you've done, whatever the case is. All we want to know is, what is your problem and how can we help? And look, if we can't help you in the allotted amount of time that we at the meeting place, we're going to go to a little diner back to somebody's house, and we're going to continue to keep drinking more coffee, Red Bulls. Look. And then look, you're going to be in such a state of frazzle and so hyped up off the caffeine and sugar that you can't stand yourself, you know what I'm saying, begging for somebody to take you home, that when you hit the door, right, you fall out. Hey, and you know what happens? A day clean is a day one here in Narcotics Anonymous. You know what I'm saying? Because, see, after being here for a while, and again, like, you know, sometimes I have to live my way into good thinking. I remember I don't need to go down to the block to trick. I can trick right here in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. And more times than none, the tricking has nothing to do with the sex. It's my inability to validate me. It's my inability to ask for what it is that I need, and so I'll go about other avenues to get what I want, thinking it's what I need. And then the insanity and unmanageability is always clearly seen. I'm talking about when you got to start putting the work in with time clean. I remember getting into a relationship, right? Because, see, I remember, like, coming here, and, like, I thought I was this pimp, player, hustler, and, like, what I found out was, after a few years clean, is really I was nothing more than a predator. And had to get honest with me. You know what I'm saying? Because, see, I already knew who you were here. You were here for the same reasons I was here. So when you said you were an addict, I said I was an addict, I already knew what time it was. We all knew what it was like to feel that same despair, loneliness, sense of hope, whatever the case was. And so I knew that vulnerability, that if I showed you a little bit of attention, that you know what we do. And then I was so slick that I would tell you, because I took the TV out of the living room and I put it in the bedroom, and I would tell you on the way to the house, because I'd say, hey, why don't we go watch a movie, right? And I'd be like, look, because I'm, you know, I want to be a kind and honest man today, I just need to let you know that the TV's in the bedroom. Is that a problem? You know what I'm saying? And long story short, you know, we would make to the, and we made it to the bedroom. You know what I'm saying? And I would dress that up like I was doing something. And I was nothing more than a predator. And I had to come to a level of honesty with that stuff, man. I'm talking about like when you stay here long enough and you find a power greater than you is the group. That times when I'm praying, my God shows up through you people. And through you people, you provide me a level of sanity that I can't always be in when I'm by myself, because sometimes the head will run so strong that I need someone louder than me to tell it and to wreck my reservation. Because again, left to my own devices, you already know what time it is. But then by doing that searching and fearless more inventory, when I have the ability to sit down and look at what my assets and defects are, a lot of times my assets become defects because I'm overusing them. I'm talking about when I'm so caught up on you, I ain't taking a look at me and can't figure out why I still feel like a big bag of what the fuck. Huh? Because I'm so busy telling you how you need to live, I don't want to take a look the way I'm living. And more times than none, when I spot it, it's because I got it. And then don't want to get honest about it. You know what I mean? I'm talking about when my friend Gary, when he said, John, well, you know, hurt people. What you trying to say, Gary? What you trying to say? You know what I'm saying? He's like, John, hurt people. I'm like, look, what you trying to, look, if you heard something, you just need to come on out and tell me. He's like, John, I'm not going to have you disrespecting me like that. And I'm like, look, I'm trying to tell you disrespect me by not getting honest with me. You know what I'm saying? And what I couldn't understand was that I was so raw. I was so raw that I was looking for something outside of myself to fix me. Although what I found out was everything that's good for the everything that feels good physically isn't always good for the spirit. You know what I'm saying? And what I found out by like doing a sixth step, man, when I become entirely raised, I become so sick and tired of being sick and tired of being sick and tired because I've identified some behaviors and attitudes and things that I don't like about me. And because now I know how to identify them. And because I become so sick and tired of being sick and tired that I become entirely ready. God doesn't remove him. It says, I become entirely ready to have God remove him. It doesn't say that God is going to. I just become so sick and tired of myself that I'm willing to let go of the image that I've created for myself. And then I become beaten once again that I find that humility without arrogance, without pride to come ask for help because I don't want to fall short to the conflict within. I don't want to fall short to my behaviors that I use to fix the way I'm feeling as a result of what's going on with me. And so like what I learned is I learned what harm was. That harm isn't always physical. And one of the biggest ways I've learned what harm was being in a relationship. Because when I came back from Florida, I met somebody and I wasn't looking for a relationship. But what happened is that it happened. And what I found out was one of my biggest complaints in my relationship was how come we aren't communicating? And what I found out is that I would come here and tell you that I was open, honest, and, you know, all that other stuff, right? But then I didn't want to tell you that after they were done sharing, that I'd be like, why did you say that? Why did you say it like that? Is that the best you could come up with? And I would criticize them. And then what happened was I found myself complaining about the very condition that I created, because why should she say anything anyways if I'm just going to criticize her? I'm talking about when I got to learn how to listen and then listen to learn. Because more times than none, she's trying to tell me what she needs from me. But because of my self-centeredness and because it's all about me, sometimes I can't hear it, or I have the unwillingness to sit still long enough to hear it. But see, after a period of time when I learned how to listen, and then I started listening and learn how to be of service to her, because in the traditions, when it talks about the only requirement for membership is the desire to stop using, I had to use that in my relationship when it came to Narcotics Anonymous, that the only requirement for membership for me and her is the desire not to use and abuse her. And I'm not talking about physical. I'm talking about like having to live in a place like, you know, a new way of life. I'm talking about like the humility piece, man. What do you do when you take a job and you no longer the breadwinner in the house? Huh? I'm talking about a new way of life where I always don't have to lead. Where sometimes I have to learn how to follow in my relationship so that I can be a leader later on. Because I remember when my job was no longer providing me what I needed, and she had become the breadwinner in the house. And I remember she would be like, John, how about we go to the movies? I'm like, we can't go to the movies. And she said, why not? I was like, because I can't afford to take us. And she was like, no, John, I have the money. I want to take us. And I'm like, you can't. You know what I'm saying? And what I was doing is I was denying her the therapeutic value of one addict helping another. Because it is without parallel. That I was denying her I was not allowing her the ability to love me right where I was at. I wasn't allowing her to display that same kind of willingness, you know? And so what happened was over a period of time, I've gotten better with that new way of life. Is that I have to practice these principles in all my affairs, not just when it's convenient. Because see, sometimes you gotta stand on principle and you gotta sacrifice the prestige, you know? So, like, man, when I got to that, like, 10-step, man, I had to start doing that real inventory. Because now, am I ready to let go of the image that I've created for myself in Narcotics Anonymous? You know? Who am I when nobody's looking? Because I remember I've heard speakers stand up here and share that they got a target on their back, that they feel that they don't get the love that they get in certain areas. I don't have that problem. That's because when I sit up here and share, look, if you want to know who I am, you want a clear NA message? Here's the clear NA message. If you want to know who I really am, my home group is called the What Can I Do group of Narcotics Anonymous. We meet at 8 o'clock Friday nights, St. Martin's in the Field, and down in Severna Park, Maryland. You want to know how I'm living? Come check me out. Because, see, on the back of the medallion, it says, my gratitude speaks when I care and when I share with others the NA way. It doesn't say when I'm out buying and shopping and sharing and all that other crazy shit that we think is recovery. Because the reality is, the fellowship and the program aren't the same thing. Because although you can find people in the fellowship who work in the program, but the reality is you can fellowship your ass into a crack pipe around here too. Because you're too busy trying to show off and look good that you forget to apply the principles that are going to keep you here in your moment of terror. So I'm going to share this last thing, right? And you know, because they gave me the five-minute thing. I notice everybody says the five-minute thing when they get the five-minute thing. Whatever. This is how God works, right? This is how God works. When I first got clean, there was a gentleman that I when I seen him, I recognized he had something that I wanted because he was nothing that I was. He was a real man. He had been with his wife for a period of time. When I followed him home, he treated her with dignity and respect. He had this something about him. I couldn't identify it at first, but what I come to find out was that he had peace. And that's all I had ever wanted, was just peace of mind, love and acceptance and all that other stuff, right? And so what happened was, is he would always share with me about like his best and worst day in Narcotics Anonymous. And his best and worst day was the day that he got this contract for, you know, the most money that he had ever seen working. But then that night when he got out the shower, he got a phone call. And they said that his son had, they'd found him in the alleyway dead, OD'd and died. And he went to the hospital and members of Narcotics Anonymous showed up. And they did for him what he couldn't do for himself during that time. And he would always share this story with me. I'm like, why the hell does he keep talking to me about when his son died? You know, and how he got through it. Well, I didn't know 4 years ago that I would get a phone call that my younger brother was murdered. And that when I showed up and the blood was everywhere and they're taking him to shock trauma. And like, look, if the drugs don't kill you, the lifestyle will. Because he didn't have the ability to say no. He chose to go out and participate in some stuff. And when the people couldn't find the one person, they came and they sought him out and took his life. And two of the five people involved in his death were members of Narcotics Anonymous. But you know what happened? And they fulfilled its part of the bargain. It showed up for me when I didn't know if I could show up for me. It restored me to sanity when I was feeling insane. Because the message was that an addict, any addict, could lose the desire to use and find a new way of life. because a desire without willingness is still just a desire. Thanks for letting me share.